America's school kids are suffering greatly in this pandemic. There is no question about that. But the larger issue of how to open schools and how soon has sparked a national debate, with the CDC clarifying its position to encourage more schools to move ahead with in-person learning. Big districts like New York, Chicago, and San Francisco have taken steps to get more kids in the classroom in the coming weeks and months. This week on 880 In Depth, a conversation with the head of the nation's largest teachers union.
Our teachers and all of the educators who support our students' learning want nothing more than to be in person with their students.
Our Peter Haskell goes in depth with Becky Pringle from the National Education Association on what it will take to get her members back in the classroom, how we need to fix racial inequities in education, and we ask her what it's like to have an educator now in the White House.
I have to tell you, Peter, I smile every time someone says it, or if I say it myself. Dr. Jill Biden is not only an educator, she is an NEA member.
Welcome to 880 In Depth. I'm Tim Scheld. New York City took a big step forward in this pandemic, welcoming middle school students back to the classroom by the end of this month. Parent Ann Herlick, who has two eighth grade boys, told us,
"I am so happy. I'm beside myself with joy. There's absolutely no downside to the children going back to school from my point of view."
Megan Cossey, parent to a New York City seventh grader, says it's been very difficult.
"I've watched my son deteriorate academically, emotionally, mentally, socially."
Pressure is mounting on schools to get kids back in the classroom. The difference may be that science recently has indicated that the virus has not spread as much in the classroom setting as some had predicted. Another difference maker? The vaccine. A new survey from the National Education Association says 84% of its members have either already received the vaccine, scheduled their appointments, or plan to do so when it becomes available. 63% of the respondents said they would feel more comfortable and more willing to teach in person with the vaccine. Now, teachers are not on the front line for vaccines in most places, and the CDC says they don't have to be for in-person learning to take place. We wanted to hear more about that teacher survey, so our Peter Haskell got on the phone with Becky Pringle, the Philadelphia native who took over as NEA head this past September. If you didn't know, the National Education Association is the nation's largest teachers union.
Peter, it is so good to join you. I can tell you, as a science teacher for over 30 years, our teachers and all of the educators who support our students' learning want nothing more than to be in person with their students. What they have been asking for over 10 months is that the government provide the resources to do just that. And as we did a survey of them, we found that, in fact, only 18% had gotten vaccinated, and we learned from them that a strong majority of them feel that they would be safer working in person if they had that vaccine. They also talked about what we've been talking about for 10 months, which are the other mitigation factors to keep the students safe, and that is making sure they all have PPE and making sure that they all have the materials to clean the surfaces, making sure they have good, healthy ventilation, making sure they can test, rapid testing and tracing, so that when someone gets sick, they can easily isolate them and keep the rest of the school population healthy. And those are the things that they continue to ask for that showed up in our survey of them as we talk with them from all over the country.
We've heard doctors say teachers can safely go back to school without being vaccinated. What do you think?
What the CDC has said, and President Biden has said the same thing, and it's exactly what we've been saying, is that if you have all of the, if you strictly enforce, these are the words of the CDC, if you strictly enforce all of the mitigation measures, and that's all of those things that I just said, then They believe it would be safe for our students to go back to schools, for our educators to go back to schools. Unfortunately, what we see all over the country is that that's not what's happening. And that's understood, right? What school district had a budget line item that said coronavirus? None. So in those wealthier school districts where they have resources to supply all of that, they are doing it, and they're able to reopen safely. In our school districts that have been marginalized and underfunded for decades, they don't have it, and they depend on the government, the federal government, to provide those resources.
There are parents across the country who are concerned about academic backsliding. Is that something that's real, and how do we overcome that?
We've been talking to educators all over the country right now about just that. We know that the learning of our students has been disrupted. We have many students who are doing very well through virtual learning. We have some who are struggling, and we know that. But all of our students are going to return to in-person learning, and they're going to need more from us. They have suffered through trauma. They have social-emotional needs that we need to address, as well as those academic needs. And so what educators throughout the country are doing is they are coming together, they're collaborating, they're coming up with their best thinking on how we can address any of the disrupted learning that has occurred, making sure that each and every student is ready for that next step in their education journey, whether, like my grandson, they're going from third grade to fourth grade. And so we are doing assessments in our school districts to find out exactly what our students know and are able to do to provide that additional assistance to them so that they can get ready and they can be successful next year.
We've heard a lot about COVID equity, vaccine equity. What about education equity? Are children of color suffering more than white children?
You know, Peter, that's always been the case. The light was shining on the inequities that the coronavirus exposed to some people, but I will tell you that educators knew those inequities existed forever. We know that inequities exist based on race and economic status. We know that there are students who have been marginalized throughout their entire education career, and we have been calling on the federal government to do something about that. So, for example, we have been asking for funding for school modernization for a decade, and here we are with our schools that serve our Black and Brown and Indigenous students are most likely to not have up-to-date ventilation systems, are more likely to have air quality that is actually making the students sick. We have been calling for closing the digital divide for a decade, and here we are. We've been talking about that before most of our students were in virtual learning, because we already knew there was a homework gap for those students that didn't have the digital tools or access to the internet. So those kind of inequities are pronounced. They disproportionately impact our Black and Brown and Indigenous communities. And so we have been calling out those inequities, and we know that we need additional resources to close those gaps.
You know, I'm curious about the pandemic and education. What are you hearing about retirements and resignations? And what impact is the pandemic going to have on the profession of teaching?
You know, Peter, we've already seen that impact. We've seen many of our teachers, more experienced teachers, either leaving the profession or retiring early. And probably even more troubling, that's pretty troubling because we want our experienced teachers. They're the ones that mentor our new teachers. But we are seeing many of our teachers who have been in the profession only from 0 to 5 years. And they are leaving the profession in disparate amounts, and we are very concerned about that. They are looking at a profession that already had challenges that certainly did not compensate them in the manner that they deserve, that did not respect them as professionals and did not allow them the professional authority to make really good teaching and learning decisions for their students. So we are already struggling with that, and now with 10 months of being ignored and having a level of distrust build among educators that the federal government would do anything except bully them into going back into unsafe schools has had a huge impact on recruiting teachers and on retaining them. And so we are working with the Biden-Harris administration on addressing not only recruiting educators, but recruiting educators of color into the profession and working hard to support them so they'll stay in the profession.
Do you think it would be helpful if the federal government set one set of guidelines for reopening across the board?
We absolutely do, and that's what President Biden and his COVID response team is talking about doing. We know that he's working very closely with the CDC. We also know that his team is reaching out to the state departments of health, and they're reaching out to the state governments to try to bring order to the chaos that we have existed in since the pandemic hit the United States. We saw the lack of leadership. We saw the seemingly not just inefficiency, but it appeared as though from the highest level that they didn't care about our students, they didn't care about our schools, they sure didn't care about our educators. And one of the reasons our educators worked so hard all over the country to elect President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris, and they're doing exactly what they said they would do, and that is get control of the virus, to work with the disease infectious disease experts, to believe science. As a science teacher, that hurts my heart that the federal government, before Joe Biden got elected, didn't believe in science. And they're going to work with educators. They're going to partner with us. They're going to collaborate with us to do what's best for our students.
Last question. I know you have to run. You went to the White House shortly after the president was sworn in. Two things. One, what message does that send? And what does it mean to have an educator as First Lady?
I have to tell you, Peter, I smile every time someone says it, or if I say it myself. Dr. Jill Biden is not only an educator, she is an NEA member. And when we visited the White House a couple of weeks ago, when she invited us, she wanted that to be the first thing she did, was to talk to educators, and invited me to join her there. And that day, she had taught classes online virtually. She talked about how hard it was, because it's not easy to teach virtually. And it's a change for educators. And so she talked about how hard that was to have an educator who's actually teaching in the ear of the president. So she's bringing to him real experiences from real educators, from real students, from real schools, institutions of higher education, in her case, community schools, has an impact, because he's hearing it firsthand what our students and educators need. And he certainly is working on making sure that he is able to keep his promise to ensure they get it.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. I know you have to run.
Thank you so much, Peter. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye.
Becky Pringle, the head of the National Education Association, with our Peter Haskell. By the way, how influential is she? Well, on day two of the Biden administration, she was a guest at the White House. A footnote here on the reopening of schools. This week, we also talked to Emmanuel Goldman. He's a microbiologist at Rutgers University in Newark who has strong feelings about the virus transmission. Listen to this.
The risk to schools and the risk to the subways is the air that you breathe. What the schools need is some method of purifying the air, and they need to socially distance, because even if they purify the air, there's going to be an interval of time before that air gets purified when there's a potential transmission of someone who has the virus to someone who doesn't. Moving things outdoors is the best, but here we are in the winter with the snow covering us up to our noses and terrible cold weather, and we can't do that. In principle, there is the risk that if someone freshly contaminates a surface with COVID-19 virus, and then somebody else touches that surface and doesn't wash their hands, and then touches their mouth, nose, or eyes, in principle, they could then give themselves the disease that way. Even that is still somewhat hypothetical. All you have to do is wash your hands. That breaks the cycle of transmission. The virus cannot be transmitted when you wash your hands. You don't need any other disinfectant. Don't need anything else.
We shall see. In Depth is a production of WCBS News Radio 880. Peter Haskell and I, Tim Scheld, are the executive producers. Find us here every week and subscribe to make sure you don't miss a topic. Just search for 880 In Depth wherever you get your podcasts. As always, be safe and thank a teacher.